first meeting at 3:01 p.m. We'll start the roll call.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Finance Manager Whitesteen?
Here.
District Engineer Gregory?
Here.
Project Manager Bernie?
Here.
Water Resource Manager Virgil King?
Here.
General Manager Mike Pease?
Thank you. But I was on the tip of your tongue. So we'll open it up to public comments. And we will now close public, seeing none, hearing none. We'll close public comments. We have no minutes to approve since this is our first meeting of the standing committees. And we'll move to discussion items where we will begin by establishing the bylaws for the water and wastewater standing.
Is there a model you're following for these standing committees?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, my bad. Got it.
So, looking at this, it's pretty standard language from what we have in the rest of the bylaws for the other standing committees, which leads also into item number 2 on the agenda to discuss how often you want to meet and basically what day and time would you like to meet.
Okay, is it mandated that this type of meeting have a set time and date on a regular basis, or is it something that can be done as needed?
Well, I think we should set it up as a schedule. Okay, once a month.
Yeah, because your bylaws right now say quarterly.
Well, it says at least quarterly.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much enough, but we've been getting a monthly, almost a monthly.
And we generally have new changes, we add on something new monthly, so
I think we should start monthly until we see how things rotate off. Until things rotate off and we can go longer than we came. That's the question I had from last night. So bi-monthly, does that mean twice a month or every 2 months?
Bi-monthly means every 2 months.
Okay. Thank you. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we meet monthly. Is there a day of the week to better come?
I really would prefer it to be at 4 o'clock, but no earlier than 3 o'clock. And let me just say, let's see. Are we going to do it like the third, this, that?
That's what
you're looking at?
Yeah.
So, let me just really briefly just look at my calendar real quick, and I can say, hey, does Thursday work for people? Does Thursday work for
you? Works for me.
Let me look at my schedule going forward.
If we set it up as a third Thursday of each month, it'll be the day after.
16th is clear, yeah. And the 20th? Hey, look it. It's the only day that doesn't have a dog for 4 months, so let's go with it.
So it's the third Thursday.
Third Thursday, and if based on that, I didn't call you to start at 3 o'clock, I guess. So
3 o'clock helps us, and we'll try to keep it to a 2-hour meeting.
I'd love to keep it to an hour meeting, so.
We're with you on that.
Okay, so that work for you, Bill?
Third Thursday of the month at 3 o'clock.
Is that work for you, Greg?
Justin, I think, is coming.
Greg, does that work for you? Bernie?
Good.
I think you had a conflicting meeting, man.
I got over 2:20 and I just got here.
So, do you have that every Thursday?
No, it was just a...
Thank you.
One time.
I don't want to schedule when you can't be there.
Thank you. So you can give a moment free to take your appointment.
Yes.
Yeah, I was in Stockton this morning and this afternoon and didn't hear about it.
Now, I don't see it on this agenda, but I know at the Park and Rec Committee and on some of the other agendas, it's about picking a chair for the meeting other than one of us. So.
I got to.
Yes, sir.
And here's my idea. Whoever is chair this year, then they will be chair next year.
That's fine.
You call it.
Heads.
What is it?
Heads.
Okay.
You're not chairman.
So Bill Pease, chairman for
installation project.
You pretty much got a lot of that last night at the board meeting, but we roughly have about 260 meters of the ground. And this week, and last week, we didn't put any meters in the ground last week, only because of the fact of the rain.
Sit here to you.
So last week was the rain days for JW backhoe. But Monday, we had just a partial crew. We put 30 meters in. Tuesday, we had a full crew. We had 50 meters installed. And we dropped back to a partial crew on Wednesday. We put 37 in the ground. So it's going pretty good, as long as we don't have rain.
Does it appear that now that they're kind of moving along, they're getting a little more speed?
What's slowing us down here, Bill? This is the weather.
Right, yeah, I understand.
Outside of that, we really haven't. You chug for a while, and you stop. And then you start chugging.
Because of the rain. Yeah.
Are you getting water intrusion a couple of days after the rain, or is once the rain stops, is it pretty low?
The only negative is because of clay soil, the moment you start stomping on the grass and you dig it out, well, the dirt surfaces, so then you're tracking that on the sidewalk and the road.
Right. So it's a little bit more cleanup work, basically.
Yeah.
But it seems to drain pretty quick. We're not seeing fits of water or anything like that inside the holes a day after the rain, so that's good. Today was a rain day because it looked like it was going to be kind of a gusher. It kind of was. Right. But they had to kind of plan ahead of having the crews there or not there.
What are they planning for tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're planning to maybe go, but we won't know until maybe 4 or 5 o'clock.
Right. So we'll kind of check it out at the end of the day. So there's been pretty good communication, I think, between the contractor crew, Virgil, the inspectors, all that. And I'm sorry I came in late, but I did print out.
You just started.
Okay. I did print out this Virgil summary from the meter project, so I don't know if you covered any of this stuff, but I can walk through it if you guys would like. Now's a good time to do that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a quick question as long as we're reaching for stuff. So we heard from one person at a meeting. Two couple meetings ago with a complaint about installation. Apparently that was a little bit overdramatic. He had even admitted himself. How is that going with working with, how is our communication with the homeowners, and how is the old, how would you evaluate the overall satisfaction or dissatisfaction of homeowners with regards to installation?
Overall, it's good.
Okay.
Understanding,
they get it.
Correct. Once in a while, we do have a guy that did come up to your previous board meeting and say they trashed my yard. And personally, I don't think that was the case, because when you hear those words, it's like a whole yard. And we did take a small part, and he did receive a letter from me saying that he had a bush that was in the way of the meter, because the planted and the bush just kind of grows over, hovers right over. And I asked him to remove that bush.
He did.
So what we did is we trimmed it back. And so when you trim a bush back, and this is called a heather plant, it's all brown on the inside, but later in the spring, it'll spring up green in there. So that's probably what ticked him off.
Yeah.
And then his neighbor has artificial turf, and I sent that woman a letter. She resides somewhere else, and I said, artificial turf is almost like a carpet. We're going to roll it up, but when we put it back, we can't stretch it. And they use pins to pin it down. We can't do that. And so you'll have to hire somebody to do that, which she did.
Did she complain, or just did he?
She did. She did, too.
She did complain.
But not here, but she did call me about it.
Yeah, he complained for her here, but I just didn't know. Okay, well, that's good to know, because I want to be able to... You know, when we have constituents get a hold of us, I want to be able to say, well, listen.
And the bad thing is, obviously, the social media next door, because we just finished a home on Newport Court, and they said we effed up her front yard. And not the case. We take before pictures and we take after.
Right. So we had them on. Yeah.
And then, so you all know, we use brown sand as a filler in, and rather than the white sand, because we didn't want that color.
The
the white one, to show up.
That huge contrast.
Yeah, and so, but because of their drought regulations on us, I can't wash the sidewalks down. I can only brush them off if I can't hose them down, or else we'll be breaking the rules.
Right.
And then bad the customer says, yeah, it's a bad example, so we can't do that. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the one hand, with construction kind of happening, and it's happening so fast, and public, you know, kind of outreach being where that is, that's kind of the struggle in terms of people reacting and then kind of being responsive to those issues. But on the other hand, we've got a really solid construction team. Like, I don't know if you guys have met JW. I know Virgil knows them really good. Bobby's really solid. We have Virgil running interference with sending out letters and responding to the residents, and then the inspectors. And so the inspectors are Aaron and an inspector from our firm, who I think they're doing a great job at keep collecting all of the information and working with the contractor as, you know, kind of more construction related, you know, extra work items come up. We're doing a really good job at discerning what should or shouldn't be extra work and tracking the time associated with that per installation. And it really is a lot of kind of a big exercise in record keeping. But with having Aaron, who's been intimately involved with the project, able to kind of answer and probably have some communication when a resident comes out and has some concerns or something. And then if it's something that it can't really alleviate that person's concerns, then Virgil can pick up communication too. And so far, from my perspective, Virgil, I think that's
worked out really
well. The installation portion of it seems to be going pretty smooth.
I know that this week, Tuesday, Aaron had about four or five of the residents at the end of the street surround him. So then he picked up the phone and called me right away. And so
back up.
The moment I showed up, he hightailed it out of there. This is all yours.
So never mind that you would be the diplomat. Eric could only handle up those
things. Yeah.
Well, he's keeping up with the crews, too.
Yeah.
So
you can't just stand around. You got to follow up.
Right. But he knows a lot of the history of the project, and I think he's able to kind of field a lot of the questions.
You know, and just so you guys know that, like yesterday, prior to us coming, we notified the residents we're coming through the neighborhood. And there's a daycare center operating out of a home, and they called and said, hey, we operate from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. We can't have our water shut off until either after 6 or the weekends. And I said, well, I can make accommodations for that, but I'm going to bill you for that extra charge for that. And they said, no, no, no. And I said, yeah. I said, you're causing me to bring back somebody or leave them overtime. So the compromise was, I asked, does the kids take the nap time? And he says, yes. And he says, right around 12:15 to 12:30. I said, for how long? And he says, well, it's about 2:30 or 3.
Oh.
And thank God they have what they call this poly pipe. It's not PVC pipe, so I don't have to use glue on it. So it made the connection a lot faster. So we shut them down at 12:30. I told them, I'll wait till 12:30, cut you off, and we have it back by 1.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great job.
And those are the type of things we're going to encounter as
well. Yeah, there's a lot of issues that are just getting resolved and aren't coming up because of issues.
How long about the break to the well?
On the record keeping side, notice you have the address of the legend completed and all
right.
That. How's the process internally in our internal staff?
In terms of doing that,
getting it in tomorrow, and is the computer being updated?
Right.
Compatibility wise. Are you able to take the information he provides in the format that he provides and translate it?
So we're still getting there, I would say. And so week one was all paper forms. So week one, we were doing everything which would be our backup plan process, which would be in the event that we're not able to. So what we were working towards was just database entry. So when they're out in the field, they have a device, they're doing the inspections, they're filling out the information. It automatically populates the database in terms of what we're tracking for the installs, which is becoming kind of paramount because of the uncertainties in terms of how things are paid back and whatnot. So
it's not uncertain anymore.
Okay, well, either way, it's very important that we track cost per installation. So that's all happening in real time. And what we set up was access in a cloud system to where it's populating a server at our office. And both inspectors had this device on them. The first week was all paper form.
So it's just a physically written one?
It's a tablet. Okay.
Is you providing that?
Yeah, we put that together. Okay. So what we can export out of that is, you know, if you have the software, we can give you the database. If you have, you know, or it's just Excel, it's just put it out in Excel. And so then it just becomes, what information are we collecting in the field, and how is that going to be used by DNF in the district in terms of sorting everything out? So I think we kind of got on the same page with that the first week, and even before construction rolled out, in terms of what information are we tracking. Now it's just a matter of getting that information to you, which this would be an example of a weekly report. And I think at this point you could look at it, comment on it, comment on the information you have, see if we want to make, you know, adjustments, or, you know, we can adjust as we go, basically.
Well, the information is there. The biggest concern I have is that the meter that's installed at 5521, that meter number, that address, and all that is getting into
it's
our
there.
System.
That is okay. Yeah. Now my concern is the billing aspect of it, and to bill each resident for their property. And that's basically...
It's just setting up the account for that particular home.
No, I got the account part set up. That's okay. It's the actual tracking what's being put in, how much I need to charge for it, and then creating that bill and putting the right number into their system.
You're talking strictly about the installation of the water meter, not the billing of the volumes. That's
all
taken care of. Okay.
So
here's
project billing.
And so it's either going to be a 95, a 270, or a 70.
Yeah, but, and it's more complicated than that, exactly. Because now we're also finding out that some people are just getting LIDs.
Right.
So
we're adjusting on that now.
We're doing possible.
Why would they be getting just LIDs?
We're saving them.
We're using the box, and then the lid is solid, or some lids have a centerpiece in it, so it's like a multi-lid within a lid. And so we're replacing that lid with a lid that has a hole in it, so we can put the Badger device at the end door.
So the unique part of the reader, the lid is unique to the reader, is that what you're saying? The lid has to have
And what it does is holds the reader, or the transmitter, out of the water. So a lot of times the meter box is full of water. And if you have that sitting inside the meter box, the meter itself could be under.
So there's something sticking out of the meter?
It's just a probe hole. And so the reader just goes right into that, and then there's a little cover over it. So it's probably about that
just
high.
Just threads into the box, so it's like dangling off.
Yeah,
the lid,
and
it's, kind of hangs off.
You can ride over it.
You can walk on it, step on it, kick it,
it's
no problem.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so the lids are unique to the readers then? That's an accurate statement.
Yeah, the lid.
So the lid has to have the need to be the reader. All the lids have to have. They all lids have to be the same kind of lid.
And just put
the
hole in.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Well, now that's interesting. That throws a.
Yeah.
Right. Now no bricks, no blocks, just the lid.
Because you still have to lift the box out to do whatever your work is.
But not replace the box.
Right.
Here's probably the three main components of the cost. It's the materials, which can be meter, which are meter in all cases. Box is what size box and or lid. So that's the material component, right? And then I don't know if you're charging for bricks.
The reader.
Right. So the meter here, that component's the same for every installation, but the things that can change would be the box, the size of the box, and the lid. Right, so the service size, so that's another component of material would be the service size. So all that's collected on the field forms. That's the material component.
Okay.
And then there's the installation component, and then there's an extra work component.
Right. So we need to maybe at some point evaluate the peer system and make a recommendation on that. Will that be the responsibility of the committee?
Yeah, but I think that's what we agreed to last night.
At some point in time.
Yeah, I mean, not yet. The tier system is already been established. The first tier would be $90 for the installation. The installation cost is one, right? And it's component parts of that particular resident is another. Whether you've got a meter, you've got a meter. Did you get a box or not? Did you get a lid or not?
Yeah, the only thing when I was looking at that chart you had last night, I don't have a copy with me, there was eight different. There's eight different breakdowns on that chart.
And that was only illustrated.
Right, but what I'm saying is that under the yellow, there was two prices that were within $15 of each other. I'm not sure that those need to be split out in two different tiers if they're within $15.
The only difference was it's a 3/4 meter or one.
Whatever the difference was, still, if it's $15 difference, I'm not sure that that needs to be, that Dean needs to go to the hassle of accounting for a $15 difference. That's close enough to clump into one tier, is what I'm saying.
Well,
so we have to decide what's too much and what's not enough.
We don't think it's too much at this point because it's a checkbox for you.
The information is there.
So that comes over and we have a system of, you know, how to essentially, all that's been costed out. So all it is pick this, okay, it was this, and this. There's our total.
I get that, but the more tiers you have, at the end, when you have to try to figure out 3,000 different customers and what percentage of $3.1 million is their cost based on that, though that many different tiers, it's going to be that much more complicated. If the less tiers you have, the easier that math is going to be to perform at the end of the project.
Well, I think you're doing it individually as you go along.
Now you have to do that. You know the cost of the project.
Yeah, I do.
Well, we do. Well, no. No, but all those figures can be, that figure, is when we know it, is going to be a set cost for that call. And what we're doing is, you know, how those columns I had on last night, you can put to the far left all the addresses on the far left, and if you're checking the box, at the end is the total, that's the total for that address. That's what they're going to charge you.
Okay, but it was an estimate, because we don't know the true cost of the project.
The
estimate part is the install.
No.
Well, whether they had a box or didn't have a box, mm-hmm. whether they had a lid only or not a lid only.
But it's still,
if
one factor is unknown, then the whole thing is unknown. We don't know.
Well, why don't we ask? Well, I'm with you. I'm trying to make it easy for staff. Where's that staff? How the accounting system that you're setting up now and what you're working on right now, the way that you explained it, is that going to be monumental at the end, or is it something that you're going to just keep up with? It's not a big deal.
We're probably going to keep up with it on a spreadsheet, and then at the end, you have to enter it in. But the right. spreadsheet of keeping up with each address and if they were type 1.
The checkbox.
Yeah, and then I have to somehow put pricing with all of that and then hopefully the total. So I am looking at every single address and every address is going to be looked at and clicked off and have a price and have a different total. So
is there a price for each column now? So
it's an estimated price.
Yeah, estimated price.
So you got these prices from the contractors. What happened there?
Those were sampling. So he said there's a sampling of 500 of this type of install. Sampling,
you should have a cost for it. There should be a cost.
No, you should be buying this. This is buying this. So the only reason we're going with entering this complication of maybe not doing the box is because it's going to save people money. Right? But in the beginning, I think with the original estimates, it was going to be a meter, a box, and a lid. Now we're saying we can reuse these boxes. It's going to save people money. That's a good thing, right? But it's going to make things a little just that much more complex.
How much does the box cost?
Depends on the size, and so I think it depends also when you buy in quantity. So you're talking $50 to $60.
Okay.
Well, you guys are comfortable doing what you're doing now.
Yeah. Plus a lid, another $15.
It's just you don't know the installation costs until the work is done.
That's
so, you know, you can tell them what the range is going to be. We can identify if they're what type of difficulty of installation it is, and there's a big price for each of those types of levels of difficulty. There's always going to be an unknown, though. I mean, they could open up the box and find, you know, a bunch of irrigation piping, which is something we ran into that
and
had to be
rock,
or a big rock that has to be moved. And it tells
you. Yesterday, we opened the box when we're looking at the next 50 to 60 homes we're doing.
Yeah.
So we opened a box on Windward Point, and we saw about an inch and a half tube going straight down, just dirt all around it, and it went way down there, and we said, what the hell is this? And then we dug around, and the angle meter is at least 2 feet below the box. So now we'll have to make a decision. We're skipping that. We'll have to make a decision. Do we shut down that street and replumb that to bring it back up?
Right.
It might have got originally cut too short,
right,
and they left it that way originally.
So there's a small group of homes we're skipping because when we look at it, it
it's not easy enough for the inspectors to discern, is this in or out of scope? If it's out of scope and if it's less than an hour, we're going to just approve it. If we say this is something that's out of your scope, it's less than an hour, we're just going to have them do it. Because frankly, it'll be a lot cheaper than having it skipped, reconciled with the homeowner, then they come back and do the work. Presumably, at that point, it'd be on TNM.
Okay.
So we're having a group of homes that we're skipping if they seem to be overly complex and out of scope. It's a very small group, and that's on this summary right here. Then there's a group of homes that were completed, and then there's of the so far to date, I just want to run through the summary just so we can put everything in perspective a little bit. There's 224 meters that were installed over 6 days of work. They're working at a very high installation rate, I think, of 37. So there's some days they're doing 50, there's some days they're doing 30. There was one day they did less than 30, and I think the contractor had some emergency work that they were breaking off, and they had half their crew leave. But overall, they have a very efficient process. Of the 224, this isn't shown on this summary, and it was just because we're still kind of developing this, but there's a group of homes that had extra work associated with it. Most of those were revolving around piping issues, where plumbing repair, or kind of lumping that into this infrastructure repair portion. And then a handful of them were things that were more associated with the resident's property, like a boulder sitting on the meter. The contractor could move it. It would take them 30 minutes. He had to protect the retaining wall, so it wouldn't get damaged. And then they do the work. So there's a small group. Of the 224, the total properties that had extra work were 12. So as a percentage, that's really low. You know, I mean, that's less than 5%. A lot of those were, like I said, plumbing-related stuff. So everything's going, I would say, smooth in that regard, but we're still having to track the cost of the work for every extra item so that we have a record for every property as to what costs were associated with that installation.
So I'm looking at a total of 224, of which 35 were skipped.
Yeah, type 3, so where it says skip type 3, those are actually a group that's type 3's in concrete.
We knew that we were skipping them.
We're going to skip those intentionally.
Right.
He's going to come back and do them in one big batch at the price that he bid. It's just he's going to do them.
Yeah, but that way his concrete's already, more individual concrete,
he's just
run the truck along.
Right.
Makes
it's
sense.
A slightly different operation, so he's just going to do it all.
What is 8?
And so the 8 would be in that difficult installation category.
Where the piping was running through, came all the way, something like that.
Right. So that would be where there's a letter to the resident saying there's something in conflict. We need to figure out how that's going to
The contractor, you're telling me on the 27th that he knew about it, because they were type 3s, he knew about it ahead of time, he did an evaluation, he bid them that way. There's no extra cost involved.
No extra cost.
But what about the 8?
If the homeowner doesn't do something to rectify the issue, meaning the retaining wall is right in our way, we've asked them to remove a section of the retaining wall. If they don't, then we come in and have to do it,
right.
But our cost has to go back to that homeowner.
That cost gets costed directly to that homeowner. That homeowner pays for it. It doesn't become part of the big pie that gets divided between everybody else.
That's correct. Okay. At least that's my thinking.
And building on that, because we have some resistant homeowners, I've been thinking to Rod is let's develop a plan on how we want to approach those just to...
That are being...
Yeah, that are being resistant.
If they get legal with them, we don't have to get legal with them.
Yeah, how do we...
Okay. And so this would just be a summary. This would just be a sheet that if you wanted to look and get a snapshot of what's been done, this would give us totals, but it wouldn't tell you what's going on each property. The next sheet would be more of a snapshot of what the database kind of looks like. It's just a bunch of, fields, and there's an address, and along that address, there's information for each field. And so this would be where I need to work with Dina so that she knows what these fields represent and how those are going to be interpreted on her billing portion of developing a bill based on this information. And there's even some information that was cut off, like there's inspector comments that will help us discern things at some point. Also what we don't list on here is the extra work cost, because those are actually going to have to be entered by hand. because of our process for change orders, which is it's all by hand. So if there's an extra work on a property, the inspector has to agree, contractor has to agree, they write down the number of hours that it took, they both sign it, so there's a hard copy documentation of the approval in the field, and then the contractor several days later sends us a bill for that change order. Now we have a record for the property of the extra work. By hand, somebody will go back into the database and enter that information in. So this is all the stuff that's automatically populated with the inspector's tablets. Mm-hmm. You know, the installation portion, is it a 1, 2, 3, is it a B9, is it a B12?
And then somebody else can do the computation of what cost it.
Well, for the extra works. Yeah, right. Well, right. So this is just the information.
Right.
I want to provide the information to the district so the district can assign the cost.
I'm sure you had a strategy involved with picking the area you picked for phase one, but now as I look at it on the map, I see that the majority of phase one is newer construction, the newest construction out of Old Town. And that was picked for strategic reasons so that we thought we had the least amount of problems and figure things out. I can see things slowing down as we move into this side of town because some of these homes have been here since 1972.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and then the map just shows the progress to date. So you could just get a snapshot. I don't know if the district wants to use these for public consumption or anything like that, but when I look at this, I mean, we're going to have a table. I like to look at maps, so I like to see, well, where are these skipped ones taking place? I want to make sure that all of those get done or all of those get addressed and know where the records are for every property. So there's a table that has the information. This is just a map just for, you know, more of a visual context, but you can see we're about halfway through phase one in 6 days of work.
Are those empty lots?
No. There are only three so far that are empty lots.
What are all those brown ones?
Most of them are.
The brown ones are the skips type threes.
Yep. Oh, the ones in the green are done in the post. You start all the way at the far end.
Right.
You're moving this way before.
Right, right. So on the legend shows all the green ones from starting from north down to south, and now we're making our way over to the east.
Yeah.
All the greens come over.
So the bases are all skip.
Skip type three, and then there's kind of a purplish one that's a difficult installation.
Which makes perfect sense. And I can just look at you and say, okay, I get it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, me and Dina and Mike and Virgil getting together on the information that's being tracked and how that's going to be used for the building portion of it, and if we need to make adjustments to the database or the format in which we're providing it to you or whatever, you know, we can adjust all that.
I think by the time we're in our next meeting, this thing should be rolled along pretty smooth.
Oh, yeah.
Well, really good.
I agree with you, Bill.
Okay.
All right, with that, we're going to go on to the filtration project.
Yes, the filter project for half done. 50% through building and 50% under construction. The structure itself is finished. They were working on crack injection over the last week, and they started backfilling this week.
Crack injection?
Yeah, so...
You filled up the cells with water, and we filled them. They were over close to 10 days full,
yeah.
I believe, because of the rain, and that allowed any, and the walls are, how many inches thick? Over a foot.
Yeah, the walls are 18 inches on the outside.
So you allow that to set for close to 10 days, and any water that works through the cracks on the outside you inject, and then that the chemical follows that water, and then as it's following and sealing it up.
Okay.
It may push the water somewhere else, a weaker spot, which then is okay, but then you catch those. And so the engineer here has felt they got them all, so they're backfilling that part.
So... they are backfilling. They left some spots low to add some pipes, but basically we're moving into the new phase for that project, which is all the other ancillary stuff that goes on the structure. There's a chemical building that gets constructed. We're going to start bypassing about 3 weeks. But we're still on schedule for September for completion. This year.
Correct. So the current rate, even though we've got rain, we're still staying.
Yeah, the contractor has worked really hard to push through the rain. Actually, there's a lot of days I probably would have given a rain day, but they just kept working out there in the rain. As they're trying to do undergrounds, they could be more impacted now.
Right.
Because what's the reason we wanted to beat the winter weather with the structure is so that at least once we got the slab poured, we could build on top of them, not be as impacted by the rain. But now that we have to start digging again, digging is what's always most impacted by the rain. So we could have some additional weather delays going forth. But generically, even with a few more rain days and such, I think that we're still set up for September startup.
So the goal is that for our permit, we have to be complete by January 31st.
So December 31st, our permit physically changes, so our permit limits are different, and so we want to be online and have worked with it.
Yeah,
to know that we know how to run it. Basically, we got 4 months to learn how to run it. Essentially, what it comes down to. All right, but then on January 1, our permit limit changes. And we actually get fined for exceedances in turbidity at that point.
Okay. All right. Then CIP schedule.
And actually, I was going to bring it up. So far, we've only had one change order on the project.
Oh.
And where are we first scheduled?
We're right on schedule.
Okay.
Yeah. And so far, we've had, but we talked about it at Pike way back when, like last year, whatever we talked about it. That's still been the only change order on the project, and that would still be a cost of like $10,000. So we haven't finalized that change order, but it's the only one we're tracking.
All right.
So we're looking at completion in September, did you say?
Yeah, start will be in September. So there's usually some punch lists and stuff like that, but usually we're shooting for start in September.
All right, CFP schedule and budgeting. So
that's what I put on there was to kind of give it an open spot here. Is there anything that we haven't put on our CIP that we need to deal with as it relates to water and wastewater? And the only thing that I can think of is back in 2015, Ludolf Scaminelli did a test for us on all of our wells, and that a test meaning that they had some specialists come in here and do a power check to make sure we're getting the efficiency out of the motor, out of the pump, out of the head, all these type of things with every single well site. And then after analyzing each well site, they gave us some recommendations. And some of the recommendations in this a thick of a document, and it's really detailed, I'll tell you. But there are some things we should consider modifying. For example, the well number two here, considered replacing the motor, is that motor right now is one of the older style motors, so we probably don't get very good energy efficiency with it. I believe that motor has been here since the 70s when it was first installed. And it's vegetable oil lube, meaning you use vegetable oil to lubricate that. And every time we put our instruments inside to measure the height of the water in there, we have to come up and really wipe it down a lot because that's oil.
We use food grade oil.
Yeah,
it's,
oil, right?
It's all fermentable, but it just makes it harder to measure things from the well, to track like where water levels are at and how efficient the well is doing. It's a smaller capacity well, it's the smallest in the system, but it's made it hard to, I guess, really know, you know, how far the water levels are, how far they are at the stream.
Well, it's a matter of a pump. Replace that with a newer upgraded pump.
Well, we might even reuse a lot of the materials there on that, and so it would really just be motor and insulation. Probably looking at.
Well, if you want, maybe for next meeting, I could, based on their recommendation, come back to you with an estimated cost on some of these things.
Yeah.
You can pick and choose and see what's a priority, what is not a priority.
So, I'm glad that you're bringing up that report again, because usually we'll write them and then we don't get much follow up in that regard. And I think we track it every 2 years in terms of what's the water levels in the wells, is there clogging taking place in the wells, or losing efficiency and capacity? Are there any upgrades that need to be made on the pumps to maintain the capacity from these wells?
And so well two has always been kind of, you know, we've always been seeing this, like, it's hard to track, it's hard to know where the water levels are at, there's all this oil in the well, but it's producing water, you know, it's wet water that's being used. Then there's other things like well 4A. So well 4A has been a well that's had probably the least amount of maintenance and issues and stories surrounding it. We don't talk about that well as much, it just does what it does. But what we've been seeing in the last few years is a decline in specific capacity. And we have what we call this margin between where the water level would be after it's continuously pumping for a long duration. We usually assume 24-hour duration of pumping. And how close that water level is to the pumping
equipment
works in screens in the well. And basically, it has to stay above that for a lot of reasons. Because it can damage the equipment. It can come, you can enter air into the system, which would be catastrophic to the filters. So there's a lot of reasons why we make sure there's a good margin. So we've seen that margin getting tighter and tighter as the well just loses efficiency. So I'd say a recommendation on four, which would be kind of an update because I read that report.
Yeah,
and all that on here would be, I think four, we should look at doing a rehab and lowering the pump.
If I might suggest something, the way we did previously is we pull out the CIP, review the CIP together, and different groups of individuals that were tracking things individually, like the well or wastewater item or pump or something, we would bring up those items and go through them one at a time as we were all looking at the CIP together.
Yeah.
And then do it. Now, the reason I asked her to put this on is Dina started out a memo to everybody about, you know, all right, we got to get back on track on the CIP.
Right.
And the schedule was to all budget items must be in by March 3rd. But usually we discuss the budget items specifically, and then we agree on the budget items, and then that's how they kind of make their way. And then we usually agree on in this meeting is when that, because usually how that happens. So, I mean, we are just getting started, but it is February, and we've got, and Gina's got to get going on the CIP.
Most of these can probably wait, unless we just have extra dollars and we want to.
Well, right. So basically, that's what kind of the committee kind of makes that decision. Okay, what can wait? What should go forth? As forward for the CIP that ultimately makes its way up to the board for approval, right? So,
you know, I think we rely on staff to kind of prioritize that a little bit.
Right.
I mean,
so
it's nice for us to be in the discussion and you don't want to hear about it. We agree with you. If you get to a point where these two items are pretty equal, then yeah, we'll get that.
The other kind of element was Dina would feedback like, well, how's the budget looking this year? Are we really tight? You know, I mean, there'd be some feedback from everybody that would kind of lead towards how critical is that and should we do it? What I was trying to get to is, okay, the original plan was by March 3rd to have all budget items in, but but traditionally it hasn't been where like people just throw budget items over the fence and Dina picks them up. It's traditionally been people like the well or whatnot, they bring it up, we talk, and then we kind of agree that this is important, and the district manager would ask, how important is this? What's it mean? Would you rather have this or that? You know, I'm trying to make some cut as to what goes into the CIP.
Right. If staff tells just the staff meeting on going through that, you can probably.
Well, that would be the other way is we have a staff meeting on the budget, but it takes a while because, you know,
right.
There's usually, you know, you talk about the well, but there's other things. So like, for instance, the next item on is plant one. You know, there'd be repair items from the wastewater side pump stations, you know, there's always little things that come up, things that Bernie found that we usually talk over and then come forth with a final recommendation. But I think we need to have that discussion and according to the schedule shortly. You know, if we're shooting for March 3rd, we need to sit down and tear out what's going to go in and what's going to go up. And actually, frankly, I haven't seen the CIP in so long, I'm not really clear what's on the CIP right now.
So, really, what I want to do this time, since we are a little bit off track, is yes, I was going to do it just with staff. Begin with. So
okay.
You're going to give me your wish list, and then we're all going to sit down, and we're going to chop away at that wish list, and we're going to make the best decisions, and that's when we'll come back and we'll bring it here.
Can you send us the current CIP so we know what's already scheduled, so we're not bringing stuff that's already on the on the list?
Yeah.
Our next meeting of this committee is on the 16th of March. Mm-hmm. So if the staff can have their meetings, that would be easy. Prior to that, and have that list ready to go, we can hear it and agree or disagree. We can all have a little more informed discussion. The question I have on that is, Bernie, I know he only puts together every year a maintenance list also.
We put 500 staff people in.
Correct. So that's got to be limited.
Yeah, I thought.
All right. All right. I'll then hold on.
Can you forward me that? So we're going to be online, come up with recommendations for the next meeting.
Correct. So by the 16th, at our 16th meeting, you'll have a recommendation for CIP.
I'll check.
Okay. Next item is repairs to plant one. That a burning
item? No, plant one, yeah.
I know, I put that on there just so the discussion was there because, you know, and we talked about it. So I think what we should do is when we get the CIP, some of those items will be on there. Do you want to do it or not do it?
Right, yeah. Okay. So the real thing is, in the last board action in October, there was some recognition that some work does need to take place at plant one.
Right.
And so I was just going to bring that back up. I think that's still what we're kind of generically proceeding is what minimum maintenance can be needed.
One of the things I'd like to put on there, I have no idea what the cost is. As I get some complaints, I think we probably all do, on the odors coming off of plant one when you're going down 15 for all homes. It moves, it's just a zone, and every day it's different. Can we research or at least kind of look at what's the latest technology of odor control and kind of get some ballpark on what it takes to help the odor?
Now, some
life expectancy and those kind of things. I'm not saying we need to do it this year, but. At some point, we're going
to
have
to. We went over to the golf course and did a test, and some of that area is coming off the pond at the golf course. It's stagnant. The water is very stagnant, and you get some odor there also. Because we don't have very, at the treatment plant, you go about plant one at the head works there at the implant, there's very little odor because the fan run off time. But you do get some, it depends on the heat, but it's right. Not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's the phone's not ringing off the hook. Yeah. And so each neighbor gets a little bit, once a week, he gets a little zone in there for an hour or two and moves on.
Yeah, we come
but if we can look at it, we can residents could see if this is a multi-million dollar fix or it's a smaller fix.
Sometimes like an air scrubber, which would be whatever, a multi-million.
Yeah, whatever.
There's a way to reject a chemical that camouflages that smell and neutralizes.
Right. Yeah, so whatever the latest technology is, whatever other plants have done, and probably he only has the plants that have scrubbers or something on.
Yeah, there's lots of technology.
Yeah. You can bring back a basic report on that for next week. I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I was running down Cherry Hills this morning about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Someone was chasing you, is that why you're running?
That dog was chasing me. And right along the golf course where there's no homes on Cherry Hills, just that one area right there, I just made a comment to Sam, right? A little bit right this morning. It wasn't really extremely offensive or anything, but I could tell that there was an odor coming from over the wall.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about.
That's a step.
Yeah.
Step.
Okay.
But we could somewhere down the road try to minimize that and get good for the community.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll put together some options.
Okay. Fluid pump station generator. Is that another CIP item?
Well, that was
the
CIP item last year.
Well, this fiscal year.
This fiscal year. So we're going to pull the trigger on that,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, and the cafe asked me to look into doing that together, which it's all ready to go. It just needs to be approved.
The input pump, is that at one or two?
That's over plant one, where the is where you're talking about
exactly the top.
The head where
you stand. They put a generator on there so that we can keep going.
There is no generator there, right? There's a portable generator.
Oh, we have to make that permanent.
And it doesn't run off the plant power. It's not hooked up to the plant power. So we lose power there if it's been a portable generator. But you can't leave a portable generator in one spot more than 30 days.
Right.
But we've had one there for 3 years now. We just keep turning it around.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, oh, still there with parking on the street. The guy moves his car 6 feet forward and moves it back.
I was going to bring, does that include like the concrete slab?
Yeah, they're going to take out the slab where the old chemical station is and put it right there.
Oh, they were going to put it there?
Yep.
And then, does that include a new air permit, too?
Yeah, all that permits everything.
I'm sorry, I got a phone call in the middle of this, you guys. So, what, really briefly, repairs on plant one, what, was anything discussed? Or?
Briefly, we were saying that there are some things that were identified that in October the board said some things should occur, and we're going to work on the CIP.
Okay.
What's the priority?
So, whether we're going to fix one of the clarifiers that we're going to use the thing for this, and there's some things to talk about there.
Right, there are things to talk about.
That's good, no, do that.
Okay. All right, I just want to make sure I didn't miss the progress that just occurred. But the time, okay.
Dana, is that generator going to go up to the board for approval, or is that going to be my signature?
Typically we bring it back to the board and just say this is what we're doing, this is who we selected to purchase it from, we're going to be in the project. So yeah, we usually bring it back.
It's probably going to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, is that is the portable generator that's there now? Are you going to convert that to
it won't meet the current air quality control standards. That generator.
For permanent generator.
So they're all new units.
So that temporary generator gets put back in the system for rotating.
But right now it doesn't meet any of the air quality control standards. What they call the tiers. It's bought in 99. So it doesn't meet the tier 4.
17.
So, but you, as long as it's portable and you use that only as an emergency.
We wait long enough, Trump might eliminate the EPA and be okay with it.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I'd love to see the Bay Area Air Control Board go away. Anyway,
somebody doesn't get rid of drinking water standards.
That's for the SCADA update.
So SCADA's going, SCADA update would just be more of a schedule update, I would say. I mean, we've kicked off the meeting, we've met with the contractor, who's Telstar. We've been working, coordinating together. So we have Veolia, Telstar, LSAE, and EPS, who's the electrical engineer. We had a kickoff meeting on the 30th of January. We have a schedule, so Vernon, you've seen the schedule, right? And ultimately, it's just kind of showing all of the individual task items that are going to take place. So right now, we're in the submittal phase, looking at some instrumentation submittals. Pretty soon, we'll be looking at panel submittals and programming. And then they'll be in fabrication. And right now, we're projecting the install. There's some site installation that will probably take place here and there in terms of just conduits and some of the instrumentation wiring that we're going to be putting in. But the transition, the switchover, is going to be taking place in April. Once they have all the panels, we do a factory test of the panels, go through all the programming controls, and then there will be a specific transition period where they'll be coordinating with Veolia, because during that period, Veolia will be operating the whole plant in, by hand, essentially. So it'll be a highly coordinated transition process.
Justin, I have a quick question on that. My understanding is Newport is going to follow next year in terms of its upgrade.
I think the OEO was kind of putting that forth. Yeah.
Newport communicates with Willow Lake.
No, it doesn't communicate with Willow Lake.
No, they both communicate directly with the SCADA.
But there's no interaction between the two.
No.
Speaking of long outline SCADA programming, now that we have the programming body person, is that working out all right?
What's that?
The SCADA?
Yeah,
the
Rambler.
Rambler is working out great, but he's doing a great job.
All right, so we're catching
SCADA up. We are catching up, yeah. We still have a lot to do, but he's making progress every day, and I've been impressed with the work he's been doing.
Good. Yeah. Great.
But not 7 to 5 years ago. So.
Yeah. But that was sort of an administrative problem. We had a body, but it wasn't confident in what it was, but it just kind of floated around.
Right, so that was.
Now we're going to
make progress. Okay, great. Lift station upgrades. Okay.
This is where we try to take one or two a year,
right,
to bid and update them. And we kind of felt that the last one or two that were pretty expensive, so we thought that we would try to group three or four of them together. And so Bernie has a list of four of our next out of our 15 lift stations that we would like to group together and maybe go out the bid to see. We've been putting money aside, I believe, every year, so much, I want to say $250,000.
$350,000
every year to do this work. So we thought, well, let's see, could we give the contractor or get us a better rate by doing two or three?
Economies of scale.
Correct.
We're paying a lot for the pump station right now. Pump station G was very expensive for what happened. And we wanted to try and reduce that.
What was the problem? I don't know if this is a project, but I thought that Veolia had the capability to run it.
Well, that's where we're at. Veolia to do this, but during the transition, it kind of just fell off the map. But we didn't know if we wanted to continue to move forward.
To be fair, we should go out to bid, but you only should have the opportunity to bid this. And however,
I don't have a problem with that.
No. Yeah. You know, if you guys can pick up some extra work, and
we were doing the whole thing, design everything.
Right.
That's what we were originally. So we'd be bid on all the stuff.
Did you?
Just to clarify, when Kathy asked them to look at it, they were doing it as like a design build project.
Yeah. Okay.
Traditionally, there's been a design bid basis for how we work around here. So it's just, you know, Kathy had started that way for them doing that.
All I'm looking at is what's the most cost-effective way to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the right way to do it. We don't want to design something that's, you know, but we've got oversight on the design.
Yeah.
And if you guys could come in and save us money, then I would say go ahead, Kevin. What do you think?
Have you started, Vernon? I'm sorry.
I think
we've already started, so they've already started.
Yeah,
we've already had two companies come out and take care of all the information, so we're just waiting on the proposal now.
Do we need? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say keep going with it, and let's see where we're at.
Yeah, that's why, because we didn't know.
We have a legal issue on that.
From a bidding standpoint?
Yeah.
Another subcontractor. We're just
I think. You have a policies on that. It is true that the district has directed work through Veolia before, but usually it's still stuff we got bids on through Veolia. You know, and so usually there was still some bidding that.
Who are the bids going back to that we've sent out?
Yeah.
To Veolia or us?
Veolia.
That might be a little bit of a. If we're asking them to bid,
yeah, but
right?
Are you getting bids on hardware or design or what?
Everything.
In any installation?
Yeah, that might be a little odd.
Well, I know.
It's just like a repair. That's like a repair.
Yeah, we're basically going to be doing the work. We're getting the estimate to design four panels, have them installed, get them programmed, and like Billy was doing the work.
I would think that if we have economies of scale through them, mm-hmm. I think that would be okay.
I'm fine with it. I'm just bringing up the legal aspect. And so I think we need to just check on that and make sure that we're not. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's a good idea. I just want to make sure we're not in violation of it.
Yeah, I just want to see. I'll run it by Rod just to make sure. Just to make sure we don't want to.
Yeah. You know. But you'll still continue work.
So let me ask
that. That's where I went. Should we move forward or how do you want to move forward?
No, I have a question though. Is Veolia managing the project and you're getting, like traditionally when Veolia has done work for us, bids were obtained, even if it was a contractor or something like that, but bids were obtained, Veolia managed it, but under our services contract, there wasn't a markup on that work. Is Veolia looking to charge their own labor, and is Veolia looking to mark up the work from it?
Well, there'll be no Veolia labor, it'll be all done on the contract.
Right, so is Veolia going to do the same thing where they simply manage that cost for the district on the contract?
We're just managing the whole project.
Right, so basically, Veolia is not making money on it, essence.
We just use power.
Is simply coordinating.
I think we're okay there. Because all you're doing, you're acting within the scope of your contract, and we've authorized you under the scope of your contract to handle that project.
Yeah. So then, if you do that path, then I should review what it is that's going on so we make sure it's compatible with all the other stuff we got going on.
Should be, because they looked at G and F.
Is Telstar building the panels?
No. We got Cascade, can't remember who the second one is.
All right.
And Cascade.
I thought I'd look at the scope of works too. Okay.
Okay. So just let me rephrase what I heard. Within your contract, we've asked you to go look into, take care of this project and getting bids for that project as part of what we already pay you in our contract. You're doing that, and all you need is to go ahead and go forward, and you'll oversee that work, manage that work within your contract?
Correct. And that lets you know what the cost. This is the cost for me to do the four pump stations.
Okay. So I'll just run that towards by Rod, and I don't think that's going to be a problem that way.
Yeah, are you only doing control panels? So like, C needed some concrete work?
Yeah, we're just doing control panels right now. That's what we've been trying to do.
Well, you're good, but once you get down, we get control panel numbers, then you get whatever the concrete costs. Overall, everything that's needed to make those stations become upgraded,
Correct. You're
going to make it happen. Electrical, concrete.
We're trying to package this stuff together.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So I would say yes. Keep going. Pretty much, unless we hear something. Well, performance test.
We talked about that, and that's really one of the wells that we're going to, staff is going to look at, see what it might cost to.
Two and four.
For the CS4 one in here?
Two is here. Four is across town on Newport. Four is with Newport, inside Newport Water Treatment Plant.
Oh, four is at the plant on the water treatment plant. Yeah.
That's right. I've
never been in that water treatment plant.
It looks different.
Yeah, they all look the same.
I know, but it's kind of weird. I just never have. Because it's never there. I mean, this one's easy to get into.
Okay, and then the export pump testing.
We were doing some work on the filter projects that changed out the control panel for the export pump station. And as part of the testing of the control panel, we ended up essentially retesting the export pump station. When we did that, we found that the export pump station is no longer pushing out as much flow as it did when we first installed it. It used to flow about 4.3 MGD, and we were stuck about 3.5 MGD with all four pumps wide open. The significance of that is the filters are designed for 4 MGD, the UV is designed for 4 MGD, and the original design under the master plan is assuming, we're adding a fifth pump, assuming that you have a reliable capacity of 4 MGD to get the export pump station.
What's it at?
It's the pump station at the end of the Pine Belt pumps lined up.
What's the MGD? It's
3.5.
It's stuck at 3.5, can't get any more than that. And that's the stuff that's right by the new shed, right?
Yeah,
okay.
And we could not get more than that out of it. Now, there's got to be a reason for it because they tested out before and we didn't have a problem making 4 MGD. But we previously had looked at our diffuser. We had a diffuser test, and you may remember we brought it up before that there were ports that had gone missing on the diffuser. If sand or grit or rocks had gotten in the diffuser itself, they would have this effect of limiting our performance on this pump station. There could be some, maybe there's some wear on the pumps. I still think it's the diffuser. Maybe there's some settling in the pipelines, and we could check the lofts and things like that. But basically, I'm alerting that I think an investigation needs to be done on the export pump station to try and resolve what specifically is going on. And we know that we have problems with the diffuser, which would have a big impact on this pump station.
So we've known for Bill's off the hook on this one, because we've known for 4 years, 5 years, that we have a problem with the diffuser before he was on.
We had a couple of the
you brought this to the board when I first got on the
diver in to inspect.
I mean, in fact, when I got on the board, you'd already had shoulders down there before I was on. This was before even my time on the board. Did we know we've had a problem there? Let me ask a couple questions real brief, and that is, first of all, we know we have a problem. We sent the frog down to take a look at it. We know we're missing some caps on the diffuser, so there's open pipes going down into our diffuser, open outlets. Okay? Going down into the diffuser, which can happen for you to go down in there, and you're saying it possibly could be clogging, so we're not getting full
inspection.
So that's the backup. So you have a backup, it doesn't allow it to push anymore. What's the fix for that, if that's the case?
I'm not clear on that, other than we may have to, you know, maybe they can suck it out, you know, or maybe they can do some work. You would have to investigate with the diffuser construction firms.
If you watch the Bering Sea Gold, they have this big old, you know, they just suck that out.
Remember, our diffuser is 180 feet long, and there's something like 60 ports or something like
that. How many?
60.
Is that many ports on there?
Yeah, so... They have a
double. How many are missing? How many caps are missing?
32.
32, maybe.
32, yes.
And we're missing.
We
don't know how many we're missing.
At the time, several years ago, we were missing 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I thought the moles.
But also, two.
What's important is where they're missing. Like, if it's the last one in the line, it's probably not a big deal. But if you're missing the ones in the front, and it's 180 feet long, and then rocks are getting into the front, you know.
No.
You can see.
Well, that's why I'm dropping my head. I'm going, look, this thing's filling up with debris. Do we have to pull that off to clean?
We don't know. We don't know yet.
We don't know.
Because
this is something we need to look at.
How many other facilities like ours who are discharging into the rivers in just in Northern California have that same kind of system?
Not that many. You weren't here when it went in, but the regional board required a diffuser when they made us move the effluent. We used to discharge our effluent into the canal next to the treatment plant. Then there was a big negotiation with the regional board in our permit, and they said, nope, you have to take it out of there. And then they said, but then it isn't good enough, you just pump it into the river, you have to put a new diffuser on it. And went in with Contra Costa, and when Contra Costa changed their diffuser, we all did it at the same time. And a specialty firm, Comex, was hired to design that diffuser system. But there are not a lot. Now, I think Rio Vista has a different kind of diffuser system. So there's some, and there's a lot of ocean outfalls, but there aren't a lot of diffusers right on SAC Regional. I mean, remember, now SAC Regional has one. I think SAC Regional does have a diffuser. So there's a couple there.
The reason I'm mentioning this is it might be worth our time to just contact them, ask them, have they had issues in the past? Who they use? That kind of background.
I do say that I think this should take priority. I didn't prioritize this. Now it's the can's been kicked down the road, and now we're getting.
Well, no, not necessarily, because remember, that's only the diffuser, it's only one part of it. That pipeline, as it leaves plant number two from the export pump station, goes like this. And every time it goes up, we have to put an air relief valve on there, and those are the pipes that stick out of the ground, and they have a little hook, a little gooseneck type of a thing. Some of them are turned off, so in essence, air could be building up on there, and so they could be blocking the efficiency that he's looking for.
Why are they turned off?
Maybe because they dripped. You know, if there's a diaphragm in there or something, we don't know, but I know there's a times we have closed them off. So there could be, that could be a part of it. But I'm not saying it is.
And there are some blow-offs, you know, so there could be some maybe material settled in the
pipe. Well, why does the pipe go like this?
Because of the, we have drainage ditches there. And
we can't go up and down, but we can't. Ditches.
So pressure, put it at the same level all the way, the lowest level, and you have to mitigate for the canals.
Yeah, so we have some of that. So the real thing is that what I'm trying to bring up is someone's got to look into, the district needs to look into what's causing it. Is it the pipeline? Is it the diffuser?
Right.
Is it the pump? You know, we're going to pull a pump. You know, we're going to pull a pump. Is the pump impeller getting chewed up? You know, is there something that's causing it that? But ultimately, it's not crisis mode yet, but it's no longer can you just ignore it. We need to really resolve why it is, because we're not in conformance with the master plan.
We still need to address the diffuser problem, though. I don't care if it's really causing
it.
We have to address the fact that we have ports that aren't operating properly, and we may have double what we thought we had 7 years ago when you sent divers in there.
Probably should be reinspected again.
That's what I'm saying. We need to address that issue. We can't just not address it. It's kind of like a it's something we have to look at. Maybe we need to go out there and look at it.
This currently is not in the CIP. But it's been something that's been carried every year as something to remember.
I'm saying. If you contact some of the other facilities that have these, and they can get a gut feel for cost, maybe, in some way. So that
we had the cost to inspect last time.
Right,
We can start with that and try to put some kind of a budget to at least get started on.
Well, if you contact the 3 or 4 or 5 other facilities that have those, they may have had some recent work done under the diffuser system. That would give us a closer feel for an exact number. I don't want to throw $200,000 at it. It's a 100 deal, or $200,000 is, you know, it's $2 million.
Yeah,
we got it.
Yeah,
and well, we still started to expect.
So I have a request. So these things that you all know about, that we've been talking about for years, that should be kind of looked at, but we keep pushing them aside. We need to bring them to the table, to the CIP plan. Mm-hmm. We need to have everything. We need to know what things are going to cost going forward in the future. You know, don't leave them off of it. But let's put it on here and say, we want to do it this time here. Why do we think we need it? So we need to continue.
Yeah, they need to be on there. They need to be on the list for the 60.
Yeah, and then they are actually
the how soon do they? How soon can we expect the pumps?
What's that?
How soon can we expect the pumps?
I think the Brent said you're pulling a crane for a
bit. We got a crane coming out to work, doing some work on the rotors, and we're going to pull it at the same time. So probably in the next 2-3 weeks.
How many pumps are in there?
There's 4. We're going to pull one of them because they've been there about 10-12 years.
So they should all be in about the same condition.
Yeah, because they rotate on 24-hour basis, so they all run the same time.
Pull one.
Since you have it out?
If we need to, we would.
Yeah. What we're going to expect it. Listen, if one of them's bad, then they're probably all bad.
How many?
We're going to pull one and take a look.
How they have a life, though?
How many pumps do you have to run to get 4 MGD?
We should have to run 4 pumps. To get 4 MGD. We have 4 now, so as part of the filter project, we're adding a 5th, which would be your reliable standby pump. But if we need to get 4 MGD.
That's the one we have on the shelf, right?
No, we don't have it.
It's a diff. I thought we had one.
Yeah, the contractor, Auburn's, purchasing this and put it in.
But, okay, and I believe it. If you say that they're all going to wear exactly the same, but what happens if one impeller was flawed at manufacturing and the others weren't? So we check one. And it looks okay, but it takes all 4 pumps to produce 4 MGD.
Yeah.
We don't know that maybe one of the other pumps aren't bad.
Yeah, you do not know for sure. It's about sort of mitigating the cost of unhooking all the pumps and pulling them with a crane versus, you know, you're trying to balance your cost.
Obviously,
you don't know for sure. The answer is you don't know for sure. You're trying to make a judgment based upon what you see on the first pump as to how much work, time, and effort. Unbolting a pump is not. These pumps are anchored into the concrete. They're 14-inch discharges tied on with huge valves. You know, so it's probably half a day of a crew to unhook a pump.
I'm with you.
You know, and we don't
have a run on one pump
right now.
Except we're testing for max performance, apparently.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, to make the new filtration system, the new one we're building right now, efficient, moving enough water through and doing what all it has to do. Will it still be doing its job with one pump or?
Well, at today's flows, you can get by with one pump. Okay. When you throw in flows that might go back to higher levels, and when you throw in peaking factors and things like that, The design of the filtration system, the UV system, the effluent pump station is set at 4 MGD, okay?
Right.
And then we shave flow in front of that. So the master plan has a peak flow of the plant of 7 MGD. So under all worst case conditions, you have 7 MGD go through the plant. And again, that was when flows were a little higher, but that's what it was set for. And then we shave flow ahead of that. So if it's above 4 MGD, it gets shaved off and it goes back to lagoons, okay? But 4 MGD is essentially allowed to go through that into the process, okay? Right now, the filter is designed for 4, the UV system is designed for 4, and the F4 pump station is designed for 4. It's just that when we tested it, we weren't getting 4 out of the F4 pump station.
Right. But right now, our normal capacity is 2?
Yeah, I mean, normally you would peak at 2 instead of 4.
But the F4 pump station won't pump more than our design is all meant to convert.
Okay.
All right. Are we clear? Okay.
All right. So, at any rate, we're going to put some effort into all of that and try to put it on schedule.
Water coming out of the floor pump, I
think.
Okay.
That was 22 filtration.
All right. So, one thing that I wanted to make clear, because there's a lot of discussion about the filtration project and what it is and what it isn't. Our permit requires us to have the filters installed by December 31st. And there's a new turbidity limit that's put in place on December 31st for the plant. Okay. If you want to reuse water in the state of California, you have to make what's called Title 22 water. And that water is essentially meets certain criteria established by the state, which includes filtration. Okay. Now, what happens is after we install the filters, we're also upgrading the UV system at the facility. And we are going to test this facility as a Title 22 facility. So it meets the highest standard for water reuse in the state of California. However, to be a Title 22 facility, there's a Title 22 report that has to get written. You have to have an O&M manual on how to run the facility, and the operators have to be trained to run a Title 22 facility. So last year when the drought was bearing down on us before we had a wet year, you know, we were constantly, how can we use the water? When will the water be ready? When can we use it? Just because we filter it does not mean we can use the water. You can't use the water until you write a Title 22 engineer's report and you have an O&M manual and the operator is certified out on Title 22 facility. So I want to only bring that up because I want to make sure everybody understands. We're putting in filters now to comply with your permit. You have physically constructed a Title 22 facility, but you haven't permitted it as a Title 22 facility, which requires
the cost of
these other efforts. I mean, it's an engineer's report, the O&M manual needs to be done, and then I think you guys have, do you have Title 22 operators already, or is there a special
support? No, we're going to affect the 2022.
I'm sorry?
Oh, for specifically for Title 22.
Title 22 is going to affect the 2022.
No. Title 22 is already in effect. I'm drinking water. I'm not drinking water, but I'm reclaimed water. Title 22 is already in effect. That's what sets the criteria for the filter that we already know.
But we don't have to go to it.
Oh, but operations doesn't have to. Okay, all right. You still have to know how to run it.
So if we did an engineer's report and an O&M, right now we'd be okay for 2022, but you have to have somebody licensed by Title 22.
We do have. So they're very full operators, we already have.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, so they already
the operations is an issue.
So what
the question is,
you know, right. So what's significant about it?
And O&M is what, $20,000?
Well, the O&M is important because it brings in another reason. On the operations of the treatment plant right now, the original O&M manual was written as a draft in 2007. And it's never been touched since then. The whole treating process has changed since then. And then we've added the filtration also. Now, under California law, if you're going to run a Title 22 facility, you have to have an updated O&M manual for the whole plant. It's not just, you know, that little piece of the puzzle. We've kind of gone along. But an O&M manual is probably at least $150,000 for that plant.
Really?
Yes.
Because it's taking your plant from a grade 2 plant to a grade 4 plant in under state California regs.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why I'm trying to make sure that people are kind of aware of what we're talking about now.
I think that's another, right? We don't need to do it today.
No.
Because we can't use the water anyway.
And we don't have anybody asking for purple pipe water anyway, so.
Right, but I think it's an item that should be on the CIP, and we should put a few dollars away every year until we get up to 200 or whatever, and we've got the money to make it happen. And if it takes us how long it takes, it's going to take. But it's got
to
be on.
Well, the other thing is even be able to, even after we get that ready, to be able to use that water, then we have another infrastructure cost to bring the water back to towns that people can use.
Or to the golf course.
You can use the plant.
Well, you could use it on the farm fields right around the plant, but if you're going to take it anywhere,
that's what I mean. We use it currently, right? That was part of our cost savings, our total water saving plan.
Inside the plant, we use the water now because that water doesn't have to be Title 22 inside the plant.
Is that even being washed down the sidewalks inside the plant because we have our own water, or is it still against the state guidelines?
We have our own water there. It saves us from taking out of the drinking water.
At any rate, I just want to point out that we can't use the water until we meet the regulatory requirements that allow us to
use it. We can't use it.
We are, however, physically building.
We can use it for irrigation.
But to redo those Title 22, so because humans are around it.
Oh.
Yeah. So we are physically building it to comply with Title 22, and we're actually going to test it for Title 22 compliance physically. But then there'll be these regulatory issues that
happen. Of course.
If we want to be there.
Of course.
Yeah,
if
you want
to be there. The need that we need to be there. But I think for the future, at some point, we're going to get called on to make it Title 22.
And
whether it's 10 years from now, whatever.
Okay.
So I think we should put it on the CIP, put some money into it every year. And
it isn't just the future. Your permit's going to require it because there's two stages to what the permit, your current permit requires you to do. One was to build the filters by December 31st. The other one was to upgrade your UV system, and I believe it was by 2000. Okay? That, at that point in time, you're supposed to be a Title 22 facility and meet the discharge limit for Title 22 disinfection. However, we recognize that if we waited to build those UV facilities, we had one dying now, and when we went to test the facility, we had no way to test it all as a Title 22 if we didn't put it all on. Okay, so we're essentially building ahead, but under your permit, I think by 2020, right in there, you were supposed to add a UV element that got you to Title 22, and that's when you're going to trigger your need to be Title 22. So there's actually a deadline in your permit.
Okay. That's only 3 years away.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's before the notification project takes place.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
All right. So there's your.
So we have to go, but that's great. That's something we need to consider when we discuss the CIP.
Right.
When do we have to have that Title 20? Do we have to have that Title 2 certification? And when, because that'll determine how much money we put into the CIP to save money until we get there. If it's 3 years, it's going to be X amount a year. If it's 5 years, it's going to be less. If it's 10 years, it's going to be less. So we need that information.
Okay.
Lead sampling for school.
Our water permit got amended in January to when we back up. Every couple of years, Veolia, based on our water permit, we have to take a percentage of our homes and test for lead and copper. And we generally try to find a home that does not have a water softener or a reverse osmosis on it. Because if it does, the state considers that pre-treatment, and they don't want that on there. Anyway, schools were never part of that program, and I assume because of Flint, Michigan and something else, state of California law has now passed, and it's amended everybody's water permit to now test the schools if the school requests you to do a lead sampling testing on their site. So there's a process there. There are four schools in our water district that we serve, and the first step was to notify the state who those school districts were. I've already done that. And then now all we're doing is kind of waiting to see
whether or not they ask.
They have to ask. And then we have to then put some labor up front with them, looking at which water fountains does the kids use a lot. We have to analyze that. We don't take the fountain that's up there in the custodian's restroom or room. We have to take something that's highly used, at least four or five of them, and then you would analyze that water and you share that results with them first before you can announce it publicly.
But it's up to the school district. If there's an issue, they've got to correct the issue. We're just a service company.
But we also assume the cost.
Of the testing.
Yes.
Yeah. We're doing the testing.
So I just want to let you be aware that got amended in January, our permit. It's rare to have that done, the permit, but they did do that.
So if we are, if the town is notified, we would go do the testing.
Yeah.
Just taking a sample and just run it like we don't have to test for the water.
There's a special bottle you have to use with the water.
Yeah, but we'd still have to, before they do that, we'd have to work with the school as to where do we grab it
right,
at.
Right,
at that.
The overall cost of it is, we're talking hundreds, we're not talking thousands.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because we do it every 3 years now.
Okay.
Okay, drop regulation.
Drop regulations, the regulations that are still present have been extended until maybe the end of spring, which then they may be reviewed again. So currently we have a zero number that, before we had a 25%, 32% reduction. Ours is zero right now. The only regulations that are upon us is that we cannot allow a homeowner to wash down their driveways, their walkways, and or let their or their car wash their car without a nozzle on it. Nor can we allow them their sprinkler systems to run for a while, then as it cascades down the storm drain, they can't allow that to happen. That's still a violation. So I just want
to. So water runoff from the landscape onto the hardscape is still a violation.
That's correct.
And we still got, because we bought a Veolia bottle, donated 100 sprayers to the town, so we still got a box of 50.
In case we see somebody without, you know, that have a,
just let it run.
That let run, we stop and we give them one. So.
And we still have a whole box left. So.
That's right. It.
Okay. Future agenda items. I have one. I wanted to talk about the master plan. I know we had talked in the past.
The water master plan?
Yeah.
Or
water, wastewater, all of it. I don't.
There's two separate plans.
Correct, whatever it takes, because I think we, in the wastewater side, if my memory is correct, we're sizing things at the moment for a capacity that we're not going to need because we're going to be built out. And some of our requirements, based on the higher capacity, are going to cost us a little bit more. So if we're able to have a master plan with today's actual numbers, and here's what we're going to have in the future. We have capacities will be less, correct?
Two things here. Two things. There are two developers right now knocking on our door thinking about adding some more capacity to us.
Right.
Water,
Advantageous
one and the Hawk Company is another.
Right.
And so we do have a later on this month, we do have a meeting with Advantageous to see how far their project is. And
they don't need water. Their whole place is flooded.
So we are meeting later this month with them on that to see how far they are. As I understand, they are submitted an application to LAFCO, so it means they're moving their project.
What area is Hoffman talking about?
Right here. The shopping center area. They can land.
Is he still signing condos over there?
/apartments.
About how many units are we looking at?
Across the here?
Yeah.
I think initially it has 110.
It's 110.
It's a lot.
We put on the agenda to talk about next time, just briefly, I'll bring in some information so we can review, Justin can review his master plan. And one of the things that was going on, the water use program is going to have a drastic impact on the water plan and the wastewater plan. And so, in terms of collecting data that engineers are going to want to give and say, okay, this is our new flow, I mean, that's sort of been the whole question all along. We used to have water flows here, wastewater flows here, and they're here now, right?
Right.
Is it going to stay here or is it not going to stay here? Is it going to go back to how it used to be, the good old days? Or is it not going to go back to the good old days?
Do we have enough history to do that?
Do you have enough history to say this and this? And there's three things going on. We had a major recession, which dropped water flows and wastewater flows in the whole state of California. We had a drought, and now we're adding water meters. You know, so we got to get to a period when things are kind of a new normal, if you would. But nothing's normal about what's going on in Scarborough Bay. We're coming off a drought. We're coming off a recession. We're adding water meters. All of those are going to impact your new flows.
When was the last time
you were looking at that?
It was approved in 2012. And it was
updated in
2009, 2010.
Normally, the way a master plan would go is every 10 years you do a master plan and you update it every 5. So you would do an update every 5. Now, because the regional board kept changing our permit, I think you did an update on the water plan, didn't you?
We did a CIP update in 2015.
Yeah, so you kind of do an update every 5 years. Because the regional board kept modifying our wastewater permit, we did several updates to the wastewater master plan along the way, but we did not go back and revisit flows. And it is true, if there's a new normal, if there's a new normal in the world, and flows are lower, then the district should review, okay, what's the best use of resources going forward? The real question is, do you have enough data to say this is the new normal? When are you going to be able to say this is the new normal?
Right. Well, I agree with you there, but the question would be, do we have a CIP item for a master plan?
Yeah, an update? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We do?
It's 2 years or 5 years down the road, and we finally figure out
we have the time, we got the money
there.
And I would think you would need these 12 months of a normal year after you finish the water meters. And then you could at least say, okay, you know, the recession's been kind of pushed behind us, the drought regulations are over, the water meters are in.
Well, and also any new developments will be closer, and we'll have a better handle on the exact number. We can guesstimate on those flows.
Yeah. So, in terms of what I'll give to date, Sedina, I think the water meters are by July. Are they wrapped by July?
No. We're now looking October.
So, wrap 12 months and then put a CIP.
We need to put a CIP number before we get there now, and start to allocate, regardless of when we're going to do it.
But we wouldn't do it before 2019 or 2019.
About in that, I think that's when you want.
Right. That we need to start the reserve for that.
Right. Okay.
Everybody should be running on the meter January 2018.
Yeah. So basically, we usually get a number. We get a number and we give it to you. And then we talk about how you like the cash flow. That's how you bring it in. We just say, hey, we're almost spending some money this year. And then you say, okay, I need to balance out cash flow next. How do you want to start? So I think that's how to start.
Yeah, and we're stuck with the rate study for what it is for the next 3 years, so we need to make it work.